Two balls and two strikes on him. Here's the pitch on the way. A swing and a belt. Left field. Way back. Blue Jays win it. The Blue Jays are World Series champions as Joe Carter hits a three-run home run in the ninth inning, and the Blue Jays have repeated as World Series champions. Touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Homers at the Bat. Today's date is October 21st, 2015. My name is Jeff Kriska. I'm here with Joe Gruen. Joe, how you doing today?
Doing good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. Joe, did you know? Here's a fact that I don't think anybody's talking about it on the internet. Today is the day that Marty McFly went back to the future. Nobody is saying that. Literally nobody. I haven't heard anybody say anything about it.
No way.
Yeah, let alone multiple marketing departments across all social media brands.
That's so crazy. I mean, I haven't even thought about Back to the Future since I was like 8 years old.
I know, that's insane. But that's cool.
That's you're on the today. Cutting edge, Jeff.
I know, today's the day. It's insane.
So in the movie, Marty McFly turns around and he sees a billboard that says the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. Does that mean that we just can't take anything in that movie seriously?
Well, Joe, you know why that movie is unrealistic? And it's because they said that the Cubbies were going to win the World Series, but it was the middle of October or mid to late October.
Right.
They didn't see that the World Series getting pushed back. You know, the World Series hasn't even happened yet in 2015. Right. So, you know,
totally
that's
ludicrous.
That really I was kind of wondering if that was like a documentary right up until that point. That just totally.
Because it makes a lot of sense. There's a lot going on in that movie that makes a lot of sense, but that just, I mean, that's derails the whole thing.
That took me totally out of it. That and my, the Marlins, or the Miami team, I think they were the Gators.
Miami Gators.
I think it was just the alligators, just like the college football or the college team. I don't know.
That's
the Florida Gators. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're joking. People won't shut up about Back to the Future. It's Back to the Future Day. Like Joe said, one of the things in Back to the Future was the Cubs. And people were calling them the Team of Destiny this year because of that Back to the Future date that, you know, this is the year they win the World Series. And right now, it is the middle of the championship series, and Joe and I were talking, and turns out we have some very different rooting ranks. So we thought going through, you know, who we're rooting for what reasons would be an illuminating experience. And then, Joe, we're also going to talk about Niners game tomorrow, Thursday Night Football. And if time permits, if we do have the time, we'll talk a little bit of Kings basketball. The season comes back next week. So we'll see. That one we may not have time for, but if we do, we'll definitely have a good conversation about the Kings. So Joe, before we get started, I want to tell everybody we're sponsored by we're basically the only thing on earth that's not sponsored by FanDuel or DraftKings.
Can we be sponsored by MeUndies.com?
MeUndies or a Dollar Shave Club?
Dollar Shave Club. That's a good one. What about Squarespace?
Squarespace or MailChimp?
We should just make up a word. We are sponsored by BoltShare.
Oh, BoltShare. I love BoltShare. Let me tell you, whenever you take anything apart and you have all these extra bolts, what are you going to do with them? Well, BoltShare, you can go ahead, send your bolts off to the BoltShare headquarters, and when you're putting something back together, you can call BoltShare, and they'll send you other people's bolts.
They've always got bolts. You know what it's like? It's like that that tray at 7-Eleven. With all the take a penny, leave a penny.
Yeah.
What you're doing with bolts. It's a totally cool idea. We all work with bolts on our everyday lives. It's so cool that somebody finally came up with this.
Yeah. Really, you don't know how much you need it until you use it. So everybody go to BoltShare, BoltShare.com, promo code Homers, and you get 10 free bolts with your first bolt mailing.
Wow, so that's a deal.
It's a great deal. You can basically build a cabinet for free. For free, Joe.
Would, yeah.
Yeah. Also, they don't have nuts, just bolts.
They don't have nuts. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, just bolts. You gotta buy the nuts. I mean,
you gotta provide your own nuts.
That's ridiculous.
That's a business idea.
Yeah.
Someone should come up with nutshare.com. Well, I don't know.
I don't know. That's sort of a derivative idea. Boltshare.com might do.
Right.
All right. Anyways, so we're going to go through our rooting ranks, who we think should win the World Series just based off of gut and heart, not based off of any sort of actual facts. So, Joe, we decided we're going to go with your ranks. So there's four teams in the playoffs, Cubs, Mets, Royals, Jays. Those are the NL teams and the AL teams, obviously. So, Joe, your number four team, the team you hate them. You hope they die. You hope their country is burned off the face of the earth. It's the Toronto Blue Jays. Joe, why do you hate Jose Bautista so much?
That's a bold statement, Jeff. I actually, this was one of my favorite teams when I was a kid because they won the World Series in 1993 and Joe Carter did it in such incredible fashion. And he looked like such a kid when he hit the running around the bases and pumping his fists and jumping when he hit the walk-off home run to win the World Series. I mean, I love the Toronto Blue Jays. I hate Canada. I mean, that goes without saying. But I love the Toronto Blue Jays. I think of the four teams in the playoffs, it's so hard this year to pick a rooting interest because they're all such tortured franchises. So the least tortured franchises is, sad to say, the one that won the World Series 22 years ago, the Toronto Blue Jays.
All right. So there you consider them to be the least tortured franchise. But, Joe, I submit this to you. They live in Canada.
Yes, they do.
So they can't be the least. So obviously they're the most tortured. But you actually brought up a perfect point as to why they're my number one rooting interest, you know. Go Canada. The home of Dinger Mans. They are built around the long ball. And when a franchise's number one moment in their history is exactly what you referenced, Joe Carter, touch them all, Joe, the walk-off home run. And then now their second most iconic moment in their franchise is another home run. And they're a team built around hitting home runs. It's like they embraced the one thing anybody knew about the Blue Jays, and that was just amassing dingers. And they're taking that to the nth degree with Encarnacion, Bautista, Donaldson, Tulowitzki. They're all just dinger mashers. And I just think that they sort of embraced the dinger hitting philosophy, which is the most exciting thing to me. I mean, I'm currently wearing my shirt, which came in today. It says, never bunt, hit dingers. and I just think the Jays are the most fun, personally. And also, you mentioned they've won the World Series most recently. Well, out of the four teams left in the playoffs, I think they have the lowest chance of winning a title in 2016 and beyond because of the way they're constructed. They're a bunch of old dudes, and the other teams are all teams on the rise with a lot younger guys.
Agreed.
So that's why the Jays are my number one interest. You know, they're out of the Jays, Royals, Mets, and Cubs, they are the oldest. They traded for everybody like this year with David Price, Troy Tulowitzki, kind of Josh. Yeah, Josh Donaldson was an offseason acquisition for them. Which, by the way, how bad do you think Billy Bean is watching Josh Donaldson be basically the best player in baseball, or one of the top three? And he got him for nothing. He traded him for nothing.
You know, I would say he's pretty mad, especially because his team went in the tank this year. So there's a few things I got to respond to. To go back to something you said that the Blue Jays have the least chance to win a World Series in 2016. I agree. I also think that they have the least chance of winning World Series in 2015.
And that
is even, they have a lower chance than even the Cubs, in my opinion, not because.
Oh, wow. No,
I really believe it. If only because everybody's rooting for the Cubs. These young guys have absolutely nothing to prove. None of them are going to get cut before the end of the year. They're all, or before next season, they are all just going to lay it out on the line. And you could see potentially a comeback from the Cubs. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's possible. Anyway, The second thing I'd like to say is when you talk about a team that builds on home runs, they are hearkening back to a 90s, really like a pre-2005 form of how to build your club. And what made it so special when the Blue Jays won the World Series in 1993 was that the league, of course, the next year goes into a strike. And it was starting to look like baseball might be on strike for longer than a year. They might go on a hiatus for quite some time. And then what brought them back was this home run race between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and some other guys that got it. And then Barry Bonds the next season setting the record. So they almost set the stage in 1993 for what the fan base would crave coming out of the strike, which was home runs and high run scoring games. So that's what made that special. Now, if we fast forward to 2015, I don't know that that's the precedent we want to set moving forward, because we all know what came out of this era of home run hitting in the mid-90s. It was guys cheating and taking steroids. It was a de-emphasis on the pitching staff, so you get these fundamentally weaker teams. You get teams like the Yankees who go out and buy a bunch of home run hitters and take the title every year instead of home-growing pitchers, which is – I mean, if you think about it, you can't build – a great pitching staff by going and acquiring a bunch of guys. You have to build it internally and you have to grow it internally, because the guys on the free agent market who are pitchers, they're most of the time they're 28, 29, 30, and they're just exiting their prime. So you're never going to build a dominant pitching staff off free agency, but you can grow it from within. And that's been the great thing about what's been happening in the last 10 years is you have these teams that are growing homegrown pitching staffs like the Giants and the Cubs to a certain extent. Certainly the Mets and the Houston Astros. I mean, these are teams that are homegrown young pitching staffs that are kind of taking the league by storm. So I don't know that I want to go back to the mid-90s. And so I don't know that I want to root for a home run hitting team.
Wow. I didn't know that the Blue Jays were going to be the destruction of baseball. We also are in an era where there's no salary cap. You can have dingers and homegrown pitchers. I mean, the Mets are the perfect example of that. They put together some power guys. They went out and got Cespedes, but their team is built around the homegrown pitching. But I just want to, you know, man. They say chicks dig the long ball, but so do I. You know, if I were to pick a team that I wanted to root for in a five-game, seven-game series, I want to see the team that will have the most exciting play, which is the home run. I mean, that's all I'm talking about here. I don't think that it's a viable, sustainable model for building a baseball team. But if I had to pick a seven-game series, I would rather take the team that can turn around on one swing of the bat rather than the team built on pitching that you're just going to sit there and watch their pitcher just sort of mow the other team down while their offense goes out and farts out two, maybe three runs like the Giants do or did before this year. You know, that the pitching is great, but man alive, the offense is frustrating to watch on teams built like that. So I'm not saying, you know, this is how a team should be built. I'm saying, if I had to pick one of these four teams, it's the Jays for me.
Okay, so let's focus on the team. I'm going to move to my third choice. Let's focus on the team facing the Blue Jays, which is the Kansas City Royals, because I really think that these teams are polar opposites. The Blue Jays have a ton of home run hitters, a ton of guys who are offensive-minded and not necessarily defensive-minded. I mean, they have freaking Jose Bautista playing first base. And then they have one great pitcher at the top, one pitcher who could be great in the future in Stroman, and then a bunch of guys who are kind of patchwork. And then flip it over to the Royals side, and you've got a great pitcher in Cueto. You've got a revitalized pitcher in Chris Young, but by no means a great pitcher. But you've got Yordano Ventura, who's had a couple of great seasons. And then you've got this awesome defense. You still have a high run scoring team, but most of these guys are defensive minded and the runs are almost incidental, even though they've scored the most runs in the playoffs. You've got maybe the best defensive outfield ever constructed. You've got a great defensive infield, and it's just, isn't it just as fun to watch guys run around the field and catch these almost impossible to catch balls than it would be to see them go out and hit back-to-back home runs? I think it is.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I can't root for the Royals for a completely different reason. They're actually last. They're number four in my ranks. It's because they're a bunch of beanball and jerks.
Oh.
They take everything so personally and so seriously. And what Yordano Ventura did earlier in the season really solidified for me, because last year, right up until they were playing the Giants in the World Series, I was rooting for the Royals. But this year, I mean, Yordano Ventura, you know, he beanballs somebody, he talks trash to them, and then he literally stands behind Salvi Perez, who's like, he's a monster. Salvador Perez is what, like 6'5"?
Uh-huh.
And Ventura's screaming at whoever this guy is, standing behind Salvi Perez. It's like, come on, man, you can't be like that. And then the Royals are always defending, well, Royals fans, I mean, oh, well, you know, this team did X, Y, and Z to us, so we were justified in doing that. Well, no, you're not justified in beanballing. I think beanballing is the dumbest thing in baseball. And so I can't get behind a team that's a bunch of beanballing jerks. You know, police things. It's the same reason I can't like the Cardinals, same reason why I can't like Brian McCann. They're just, they try to police the other team, and they think that they can do no wrong. And so for that reason, they can make all the stylish catches they want. They could be, you know, the most revolutionary team in baseball, which normally I would like, but they're just a bunch of beanball and jerks I can't get behind.
But forget Yordano Ventura, okay? Just eliminate him from the equation. Are there really any other hateable players on this team? Some people hate George Brett. I personally think he's my favorite player from past or present. I mean, I'm such a George Brett fan, but I can go on and on about that. Look at the rest of this roster outside of Yordano Ventura and his beanballing ways. There's really not many hateable players on this team.
Whoa. Sorry, my computer just started playing a video. While you were asking me that, I Googled Royals beanballs, because I remember there's a lot earlier in the season where they were really rubbing people the wrong way, and there was a lot of Royals-based fights outside of Mr. Ventura. So sorry, I accidentally muted you there.
That's okay.
Yeah, I was just tired of your non-beanball hating ways, so I muted you.
That's the beanballing.
Yeah, so there was a lot of just like a lot of chippiness, a lot of players taking things personally earlier on in the season, and it was like everybody on the team, so it was hard to pinpoint one person. And I mean,
let me defend that real quick. First of all, George Brett is their VP of personnel. He might be one of the chippiest players of all time, if not the chippiest. So some of that could be coming from him going in and giving them, rally speeches before every game and getting them fired up to go and fight the other team. Part of that could also be, you know, this is the little brother syndrome played out with a baseball team. Even when the little brother, you know, grows up and he makes more money than his big brother, he still is, you know, until he takes the crown in the family, so to speak, and for the Royals, that would be winning a World Series, he still kind of feels like the underdog and that he needs to prove himself. And so it doesn't matter that the Royals went to the World Series last year and had the best record in baseball this year. They still kind of feel like underdogs.
Are they the little brothers to the Cardinals? Is that what you're...
To the Cardinals, to anybody. I mean, I don't know who they beamed specifically, but really to anybody. I mean, to the Yankees, to the Red Sox, to who's in their own division? The Detroit Tigers and the Chicago White Sox. I mean, they're little brothers to almost anybody who's won a World Series since 1985 or whenever they won theirs. I think it was 85, right?
Yeah, somewhere in there, mid to late 80s. I can look it up.
85.
Okay. So that's understandable, but I wouldn't say defending their actions via little brother syndrome is the best thing to do to me, because my big criticism of the Seahawks and their fans is their rampant little brother syndrome, which up until the 49ers were just terrible. Might I remind you, after the Seahawks won the World Series, they still had a massive little brother syndrome about the 49ers, even when it was clear that they were much better. So I hate the little brother syndrome in sports. It's one of the most obnoxious. I think it's one of the most obnoxious things. It's like, your team is good. The Royals are good. The Royals are great. They went to the World Series last year. Didn't they have the best record in the AL this year?
They did.
They are good. They don't have to have this little brother syndrome. That's what's
– okay. But much like the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, it doesn't matter how many times you make it to the World Series or to the Super Bowl or to the NBA championship or whatever you want to say. If you don't win it, you are eternally a failure to every generation, to even, you know, the people that start paying attention to baseball 2 years from now. I mean, they're not going to remember that the Royals went to the World Series for 2 years. They're just going to remember that they lost it.
Okay. I like how you said that they went to the World Series for 2 years. So,
I mean, to me, it's a foregone conclusion. But look, when you've got a team that has the best defense in the league and has for 2 years, you've got at least a solid structure of pitching. I think that can neutralize. The only thing it can't neutralize is if they're hitting it out of the ballpark. But anything that's hit within the ballpark is going to get caught.
Yeah, I was gonna say the world's best defense won't help at all if the ball's sitting in this upper deck,
right?
But yeah, that's actually a good transition. So they right before we started recording, the Blue Jays destroyed the Royals' morale and their will to win the series. That's not true. They won 7-1 today. Marco Estrada had a great outing. When Gibbons went out to take the ball from him, they showed it in slow motion a couple times. All he had to say for Estrada, he just said, wow. Because he went, I believe it was 6 2/3, one run. He gave them exactly what they needed as the Blue Jays just rolled over the Royals today. So we talked it through. There's two games left in the series, if needed. One on Friday, which if the Royals win, they're going to the World Series. If they lose, if the Blue Jays win, they'll be on Saturday, they'll be game 7. And so we talked it out. We think Friday's going to be a duel between Price and Cueto. Cueto had the blow up earlier in the series, and we think he's going to take on David Price, who
got shelled.
He got shelled as well. So it's not going to be a low scoring game, I don't think, unless one of these pitchers really turns it on. So game 6. Cueto Price. Joe, what do you think is going to happen?
So I will actually take the opposite route, because I think they're both two good pitchers on borderline. I mean, if you want to say great pitchers, they could be classified as at least very good to great pitchers in over the course of the regular season. I just don't see them getting blown up again. Now, it is a little bit concerning that Price hasn't really had a dominant game this series, and potentially neither is Cueto. I would have to look that up. But I think at least one of them is going to turn it on. I would be shocked if both got shelled.
Really?
So it'll either be a low-scoring game or you're going to see one team walk away with it.
All right, Joe. I'm going to give you some numbers here. I just pulled them up, and it don't look good for either of them. Uh-huh. Johnny Cueto in 4 career starts in the postseason, 6.93 ERA and 1.5 WHIP. That's and the only game he won. Actually, it's 5 appearances, 4 decisions. The only game he won was the Houston game in the ALDS this year. It was his start against Houston. Right. Granted, his 6.93 ERA. That does include his 36 ERA from the game earlier this series against Toronto. So you take that out and you're looking at, let's see here. baseball reference isn't doing it. You're looking at a 386, a 1.8, and a 10.8. So
that's not so bad.
It's not so bad. David Price, on the other hand,
very bad.
He is consistently bad.
Yes.
Consistently bad. In his appearances, it looks like there's 10 appearances here, 5.24 ERA, 1.2 WHIP. So I think this could be a symptom of both pitchers maybe having trouble being the great lockdown pitchers they are all year during a short series. They just may not be as good.
Yeah, I mean, neither one's really had played for teams that have consistently made the playoffs. So every time it happens, maybe they just have short memory and they can't really adjust, you know, every time they relive the panic that they felt the first time. So the thing about Cueto, I'm looking at his game logs from this postseason. Three straight games with a home run. It's almost guaranteed that the Toronto Blue Jays are going to hit a home run.
Yeah, it is.
It's just a matter of how much damage it's going to cause. So maybe now I'm leaning more toward your side, because if I think that Toronto's going to hit a home run, they're probably going to score at least two runs off of it. And then he would have to be completely dominant the rest of the time, which he hasn't been thus far. I don't know. I'm going to say it's going to be like 5-3 Royals.
5-3 Royals. Okay.
Yeah. Because I don't trust the Blue Jays bullpen at all. And the Kansas City bullpen is as bad as lockdown a bullpen as there is in the league. So.
Joe, have you heard of 20-year-old closer Robert Ozuna? That's how they constantly refer to him on highlights in the broadcast. They're always like the 20-year-old closer, Robert, or is it Robert or Roberto?
Roberto
Ozuna.
And I'm sure the fans are like, we have a 20-year-old? What?
They keep mentioning him, but outside of Ozuna, I mean, yeah, their bullpen is nothing compared to the Royals bullpen, even without Holland.
They have a 42, almost 43-year-old LaTroy Hawkins in their middle relief. That's incredible.
He's twice the age of Ozuna.
That's incredible.
Wow. So you think the series ends on Friday then?
I really do. Yeah, I don't think the Royals are going to let it go seven. If they do, they could be in a lot of trouble, because a home run can swing a game seven easy. So I think for the Royals to win it, they have to win on Friday. I think they're going to come in ready to do that.
Okay, and if they don't win, the game seven, like we said, will be on Saturday. We think it'll be Ventura and Stroman. That hasn't been announced yet officially. So, Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I would trust Stroman more in that game.
Yeah, like we talked about, Ventura, it can blow up. I mean, Ventura got sent to the minors for one day earlier this year. He only came back up because of injury. He's pitched a lot better since then, but Stroman, the only reason he hasn't been in the rotation all year was he was hurt. So,
and he's always been a top prospect. It's not like he came out of nowhere.
Oh yeah, I was in on Stroman last year. I remember I was in our fantasy baseball league. He was like my jewel keeper. I was so excited for him, and then he went and hurt himself in spring training. So,
yeah.
If it goes seven, though, it sounds like you think it might be. You think it's going to be Royals in six, potentially Blue Jays in seven, if it's not Royals in six?
I would say it's really close. Like I said, I'm always going to pick defense over. I think even the defense could make Ventura look great in a game like that. And again, we don't know that it's going to be Ventura. It could be Chris Young. But I think if it's the matchup that we think it's going to be, I'd give a slight edge to the Blue Jays and win in seven.
Oh, wow. So now that means that now we've concluded our discussion. You are ready to vault the Blue Jays. That's what I'm hearing.
Of course not, because my second favorite team to win it all, not second favorite, but the team I'm obviously rooting for second, and only because the team in first is just, I think you got to almost not have a soul to root Cubs this year. But the Mets are my second-rated team. And the reason I ranked them second, I've been on their bandwagon. Anyone who listened to our preseason podcast know I love the Mets. I love the Mets pitching staff. I love the way their team's set up. And they remind me so much of the 2010 Giants that I can see this team becoming a dynasty if they treat it like the Giants, or if they treated it better, like if they don't give Daniel Murphy a 2-year, $30 million contract or something. I think that they could potentially win for many years to come. Because if you look at the Giants or this year's Mets and 2010's Giants, so similar, right? Like they've got a young catcher that's kind of anchoring the pitching staff, a very young pitching staff. They brought up Noah Syndergaard. You could say that's similar to the bring up of Madison Bumgarner, because everyone thinks that Syndergaard arguably could be the best pitcher on this team in a year or two's time. You've got Matt Harvey and Jacob DeGrom, who've been around for a few years now. And that could, you know, harken back to Tim Lincecum and Matt Cain. There's so much going right for this team. And I haven't even really talked about Steven Matz, who's going to be pitching tonight. There's so much right about how you build a baseball team, in my opinion, with the Mets, that it's hard to not think they're going to win at all.
All right. So I can't disagree. I mean, the Mets, they ended up third in my ranks, just sort of out of default, because I really hate the Royals and I really like the Jays. And like you said, you have to be without a soul to not root for the Cubs after everything that they've gone through this year. So then we're left with the Mets, which we had a good amount of, I didn't believe in them going into the season. And right. I had questions about David Wright. He proved it during the year that those questions were valid, because he got the spinal stenosis problem. He's getting old. He's getting up there.
Right.
Really, it took the trade of Yenis Cespedes to sort of take that lineup into respectability. And then suddenly Daniel Murphy is the hottest hitter on the planet. Because I never doubted
a la Cody staff. Ross. I mean,
he's the Cody Ross of this team. Although Cody Ross came over late in the season, so you could argue maybe it's actually Yenis Cespedes that's the Cody Ross of this team. But Daniel Murphy's the one hitting the dingers left and right, so that's exactly. the easier comp to make. But I believed in the pitching staff preseason. I thought that they were very good. You said they might be the best in baseball, that I wasn't so on board with, but I think I might be there now, because they probably are the best in baseball.
Right.
When Dylan G's your super utility pitcher, I mean, come on. I mean, most pitching staffs would love to have him in as like a number three or a number four at worst.
Right.
And he's their flex guy. I've come around on the Mets. I think their in-season acquisition of Yenis Cespedes really put that team together. I just want to say I was right about Michael Kadire. That's all I want to say.
Good. and we were both wrong about Curtis Granderson, we should also say.
Yeah, we both thought – well, what did we say about Curtis Granderson? I thought he was going to have more homers.
Oh, that's right. You did say that. You thought he was going to have more homers. I thought he was done.
No, I thought he was going to – yeah, because they brought in the walls at Citi Field, and I remember seeing a graphic where they overlaid Granderson's almost home runs against the regular home runs at Citi Field. So I said, he'll probably hit three, maybe four more home runs. He's not the best player, but he's fine for what he is at this point.
So if you look at I really – when I talk about the Mets, I tend to focus on the rotation, because it's just mm-hmm. – it's just dazzling to me that they built this. And they're all homegrown guys. Jacob DeGrom is arguably the only one that's come out of nowhere. They always like, it's not that he came from nowhere, but he was not expected to be the best pitcher on this team. And I would have to say, according to the stats, that he is. Matt Harvey's been around for a while. And Jacob DeGrom been around for a while. And then Syndergaard and Matz have come up this season. Both look dominant. Both could be arguably aces on a lot of teams. And then they still haven't pitched Zach Wheeler, really, who was the main piece in the Carlos Beltran trade. So imagine what this team's going to look like. They're going to have a bunch of dudes who are all under 28 years old, who could arguably all be aces on other staffs. I mean, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a very well-built team, and then they're going to start having the question if their offense struggles next year, which piece they're going to trade away, which is not a bad problem to have. But yeah, it's top to bottom, it's incredible. And the thing that's most incredible to me is that Bartolo Colon anchors the whole darn thing. Like, you have all these young guns, and then you just have big, fat, 42-year-old, 420-pound Bartolo Colon just out there dealing. I think that's actually an unsung hero of this pitching staff is Mr. Colon.
Yeah, because they didn't have Mats and Syndergaard for a long time. I mean, those guys came up later. So he was, I think it was their opening day starter.
I do believe that's correct. And he's not spectacular. I mean, he's got an ERA over 4, but he's that innings eater that you need when you have young guys. You don't want to tax their arms. There's a whole to-do with Matt Harvey's 180 innings pitched. I mean, you are what you eat, so I'm pretty sure Bartolo Colon's arm is made out of bacon cheeseburgers by now. So he can just go out there and just pump inning after inning after inning, and so they don't need the bullpen so much so that they can save the arms of the Harveys, the DeGroms, the Syndergaards, the younger guys, and lengthen their careers. And I think that Colon is helping the success of the younger guys by being the innings eater so that they can turn to the bullpen if they need to help these guys out so they don't tax their arms so much.
I agree. And the same could be said for John Neese, and the same could be said for, as you said, Dylan G. I don't think there's going to be room for these older guys next year. I think regardless of what happens in this playoffs, what you're looking at when you look at their depth chart in the playoffs, add in Zach Wheeler, and that's the team that you're going to see. Maybe they'll trade away Zach Wheeler if people still think highly of him. But, I mean, he's 25 now. So he's kind of lost all that prospect appeal. I think they'd rather just throw him in the rotation at number 5 and see what he can do. And if not, if he doesn't do well, then they still have a backup plan in John Neese. They have a backup plan in Dylan G. I think Bartolo Colon's probably done after this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's 42. But I mean,
they also have Rafael Montero. I totally forgot to talk about him.
So I mean, yeah, they have we talked about a lot in the season preview with a lot of different teams. They have depth on depth, strengths on strengths with their pitching staff, and like you said, I think G will start in the rotation next year, but I think he'll go back to his super utility role, for lack of a better term, once Wheeler's back from Tommy John. I just looked it up. It looks like he's looking at coming back in June. So G'll be in the rotation first couple months of the season. Then they'll switch to Wheeler and Joe. I have bad news. Bartolo Colon will still be on the team next year unless he retires. He actually has one more year on his contract.
Oh, okay. Well, they might just buy. Can they buy him out?
They could. But it looks like he still has $11 million on his contract, if I'm reading this right. Ouch. So that's a lot to try to chew up. Although if one man could eat that much salary, it'd be Bartolo Colon.
Bartolo Colon.
Oh, all right. So after getting 3 straight Bartolo Colon fat jokes in there, I think we should talk about your number one rooting team, which is the only team we haven't talked about yet. It's the Cubbies. They, like the Astros, I thought they were both going to be good next year, but they both went all in this year, basically called up all their prospects and pushed all their chips in the middle of the table. Astros went pretty far. The Cubs went even further, but Joe, I don't think they go any further than tonight.
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, the matchup I believe is Mats and Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any question of who's going to win that pitching matchup. So it's just a matter of if the team that's hit the most home runs in the playoffs, which is the Cubs, can piece together some runs late to keep their hopes alive. But let's just think about it. I mean, let's strip logic from this whole thing. Just using your heart, you're talking about a team that hasn't won the World Series in over 100 years. Mm-hmm. You're also talking about a team that was, you know, represented – in arguably the movie of our youth, Back to the Future, as being the team that wins the World Series. How cool would that be if they somehow come back from this a la the Red Sox in 2005, and they win the World Series. Wouldn't that would be just the most insane thing with Theo Epstein at the helm again. I mean, that would be awesome. I can't not root for that.
It's hard to not root for it. And Joe, it's actually two teams. Don't forget, Rookie of the Year. That was the Chicago Cubs.
That's right.
Another team of our youth. And also, Joe, it's the top of the first, and they're already losing 4-0.
Oh, no.
When I pulled up to see who was pitching, I was like, wait, is this the results from another game? But no, they're already losing 4-0. So while I agree with you everywhere there, the Cubs, I wish that they were going to win the World Series this year. They just, it's not in the cards for them this year. It's easy for me to say now. They're pretty much well on their way to getting swept in the NLCS. But I love so much about this team. They have so many young, good, not just good players, but great players. If the Mets pitching staff joined the Cubs' offensive skill players, then it would be
they'd win the next 10 World Series.
It'd be all over. Yeah, it would be. They'd shut down Major League Baseball.
Right, and you'd have to keep Arrieta in there as like the one guy you bring over from the Cubs pitching staff. But that's still, you look at the way this team has been constructed. None of these guys are. So Chris Bryant was drafted by the team. He's arguably their best prospect. Starlin Castro was drafted by the team. Oh, I guess Jorge Soler and Baez. But then some of these guys, they were top prospects from other teams. And because Theo Epstein's there, he brings along Anthony Rizzo, who becomes the cornerstone for the offense over the course of the last few seasons. I mean, he was the top prospect for the Red Sox. I don't know how he made his way to the Padres and then back to the Cubs. I'm sure there's some convoluted flow chart to show that, but
yeah.
I mean, this team really, and Addison Russell. I mean, if not for his injury, then Arrieta would, Javier Baez would not be starting at shortstop for them right now, and they'd have Addison Russell, and maybe some of these games would be a little bit closer. So I don't know. It's just so amazing to me how this team came into being, because they've had such poor luck over the years. Like, they lost Mark Pryor, who's supposed to be like the next Randy Johnson. They lost him early. They lost who's the other guy they had?
Kerry Wood. He had a decent run, but he flamed out too.
Yeah. So it's amazing to me that all of this has worked out for them.
Yeah. No. I'm very happy for the Cubs. And we were talking in the preseason. We both love the Cubs. Like I said, I thought they were going to be good next year, but they sort of went all in for this year. But that makes me even more excited for them next year.
I think they're a pitcher away. I mean, you heard about Zach Greinke absolutely opting out of his contract with the Dodgers. If he hits the free agent market and they lose, let's say, tonight, and they realize it's because they don't have a pitcher outside of Arrieta that can be considered dominant, maybe they go out and they spend a ton of money on Zach Greinke. And then look out. I mean, this team next year.
Yeah, but Zach Greinke's got to come to the Giants. It's been prophesized.
you think?
He's too young
for us, Jeff.
There's tons of money coming off the books. The Giants desperately need a pitcher. Just think if they had Zach Greinke this year, we didn't have to sit through the garbage back end of the rotation that half of it went on the DL with suckitis half the time.
Right.
There's going to be spots to fill because Hudson's not going to be back. Vogelsong, if he comes back, he's a loony man because he hasn't been a good pitcher for a while now.
Lincecum's not a rotation.
Lincecum's
arguably not on it.
Yeah. Well, Lincecum will probably be on the team on a cheap deal while he rehabs his hip. Just like a couple mil. Yeah, that's fine. But there's going to be money to spend because a ton of money's come off the books. Right. We're paying Marco Scudero like $6 million this year to sit at home and, crack beers.
Right.
And there's a definite need at pitching. So I just think it makes too much sense. That and Greinke's sort of a perfectionist, and he likes the challenge of the thought part of baseball. Could you imagine somebody like that pitching at AT&T Park, trying to figure out the best way to take advantage of the
alley?
Yeah.
The short porch and avoiding that. Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes a lot of sense. And not only that, I mean, it's well documented that Zach Greinke has anxiety issues and has been struggling with anxiety issues for since his, you know, coming into the league and probably before that.
Yeah.
So to pitch for a team like the Giants, who the fan base is so supportive of every player, almost to a fault, that you can,
Joe, except Brandon Belt for some reason.
Except for Brandon Belt. Yeah. He's arguably the only player I even like anymore. It's like a weird kind of thing. He'll be given such a long leash. He could go out and struggle for a bit. And if the team's winning, ultimately, no one's going to care. So,
no. I mean.
And how many franchises can you say that about?
Not a lot. And I think it's the whole together we're giant, let's all hold hands, kumbaya sort of persona that the team has built for itself, that they represent the city is sort of the thing that they like to say. So it's like, oh, we're all one big family, you know, please don't yell at our players. But anyways, we're not talking about the Giants. Arguably this is a Giants podcast, but Zach Greinke, yeah, he could end up on the Cubs next year if they want to open their pocketbooks for him. And that would really give them a great chance of not only repeating, getting to the playoffs, but taking the division from the Cardinals, I think.
I think that's almost a foregone conclusion if that happens. They've also got I mean, he's 30. He'll be 36 next year, or maybe still 35. Dan Heron, who I think could fill in if they decide that any of those guys fall off. Kyle Hendricks, I think, is a very good pitcher. He just is very young and inexperienced. So I think he still needs another year under his belt to solidify as a very solid three or four. And I don't think John Lester's done. So they've got a lot of pieces where if they brought in a 1A to, or a 1B to Jake Arrieta's 1A in the form of Zach Greinke, then I would have to bet on them to win it all.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, except for it's an even year. Just keep that in mind.
That's right. Forgot about that. So maybe they'll win in 2017.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, is I wanted them to win this year so they didn't have to wait 2 years to do it. Going back to one thing before, actually, the path Anthony Rizzo took to be on the Cubs is actually kind of interesting. He was the main centerpiece with the Adrian Gonzalez trade,
right,
to get Gonzalez to the Red Sox, and then he was sort of the main piece in the Andrew Cashner trade.
Cashner came from the Cubs.
Yeah. So then I guess Cashner. Yeah. Then Cashner. How did Cashner end up on the Padres?
Well, he must have come over from Rizzo being on the Padres.
So that's how it all happened. So
very interesting.
Yeah, involved in two big. I mean, that his pedigree was kind of solidified there because Cashner's a good pitcher. Gonzalez is a great hitter. So
now, was he traded for and from Theo Epstein? Like, was he traded from Theo Epstein with the Red Sox and then four with the Cubs? Or was Theo Epstein even with the Red Sox when that went down? I mean,
It's going to be close because I know Epstein was hired in 2011. I think I heard on a podcast today by the Cubs, and the trade from the Red Sox was in December 2010. So it depended on when he was. No, on October 21st, 2011. So, yes, Theo Epstein traded him while he was the GM of the Red Sox.
Wow.
And traded for him almost immediately as the GM of the Cubs.
How cool is that? I mean, the whole reason that even went down, I mean, is just a difference, a stark difference in how the fan bases react to GM moves. You almost cannot be GM of the Boston Red Sox without trading away prospects for big name players. And in Chicago, you can totally trade away established players for prospects. Like they're totally for that. Whatever is going to build a solid enough team. So it's so cool. Yet again, another reason why it's awesome to see Theo Epstein with the Chicago Cubs, because it's a generous fan base that will put up with losing for a few years in order to build a super team like what they have now.
And also because it means that the Red Sox don't have them, and Boston fans are the worst.
They're not worse than Dodger fans.
Probably on
par. They're now worse than Yankees fans, but once upon a time they were not. So.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. So
there's like a lumping of five markets that are all just impossible to talk to.
They're all the worst.
Yeah, they're all the worst.
You know who's becoming borderline the worst? Warriors fans.
Oh, dude, they've been the worst. Holy cow. You'd think they've been like the Lakers of this decade. It's crazy.
Yeah, they've had one good year, and they're talking about how they're going to be the best team ever. And it's, you know, maybe slow down a little bit, you know?
Slower roll, yeah. I mean, the West is tough, right? You're not in the East.
Yeah, and Draymond Green, guess what? Not that good.
Not as good as he was.
Yeah, he's going to parlay one really good year into one albatross of a contract, and that'll cause some problems.
And you still got a center with bad knees, so I don't know what you're talking about. Are we talking about basketball now? Because I have a few questions.
We can talk about basketball now. So real quick before we do that, Joe, sounds like your World Series prediction is Royals, and let's be honest here, it's a foreground conclusion, it's going to be Mets. So yes. One sentence, no expounding, who wins the World Series?
Mets.
One word. Nice.
I think best pitching staff. Mets because of the best pitching staff I've seen since the Giants.
I said one sentence because mine has a caveat. Mm-hmm. If it's Mets Royals, which I don't think is a foregone conclusion, I will take the Royals. If it's Jays Mets, I will take the Mets.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, because we're talking rooting interest is different from what you think is actually going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, I think the Royals will take the Mets, but I think the Mets would take the Jays. So, Joe, basketball questions.
Yes. Okay, so I have one. We're talking about the Kings, right? I mean, we are talking basketball, but ultimately this is more about the Kings.
Yes.
First question, is Kostakoufos really our starting center?
God, no. No, 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 no. No. There's going to be one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to be, because he's looked really good in preseason from what I've seen, it's going to be Willie Cauley-Stein next to Cousins with Kufos backing up both of them. And then Rudy Gay is going to sometimes play the four when they play small ball with Cousins at the five. So, no.
Good.
Mr. Kufos is not going to be our starting center. That would be a disaster.
Good, because I looked at the depth chart. That's the first name that pops up right in the middle, and it's Kostakoufos. And I'm thinking, all right, maybe I understand giving Cauley-Stein some time to develop, but really? Like, that's what we're going to do? That's why we're bumping DeMarcus over to power forward? That's crazy.
No, Willie, I watched a lot of the preseason that I could this year. It was kind of hard because it was difficult to find good streams down here in San Jose.
Right.
But Willie Cauley-Stein is so hyper-athletic, and it might be a product of the fact that it's preseason, so a lot of the older players don't really try as hard. But he's so impressive on defense. He's looked his rebounding needs some work. He has some positioning issues there, but he's been exactly what the Kings thought he was going to be when they drafted him. Here's this awesome defensive guy stick next to DeMarcus Cousins, who is underrated on defense in his own mind, and they're going to create these twin towers sort of deal. He's had some conditioning issues, so Kufos will probably play more than we want him to. They'll probably run small ball more than I want them to, but that's where they stand right now. I think Willie Cauley-Stein, if he's not starting, he's going to get a lot more minutes than anticipated.
So, if you were forced to compare Cauley Stein to a player of the past, are we talking like Samuel Dalembert? Are we talking Marcus Camby or Chris Anderson? Like where on the extremes of this does Willie Cauley Stein fall?
That's a, cause Marcus Camby, he was a much better rebounder than Willie Cauley Stein currently is. If I had to say to compare, oh my God, to compare him to a past person, I would say, God, that's tough. Cause the only person I can think of to compare him to is a much more athletic, like Nerlens Noel, lots of blocks. So it's not really a past player. It's more of a current player.
Okay. That's fine too.
Yeah, but he's more athletic. So if Nerlens Noel wasn't, super creaky like he is, he's very stiff out there, but his sort of, he has great help defense. He has good on-ball defense, which is better than Nerlens Noel. Right. If I had to pick a player from the past, it might be Alonzo Mourning with worse rebounding.
With worse rebounding.
Yeah, because Zoe was a great rebounder too. That's the thing is a lot of these –
couldn't you just say Marcus Camby with worse rebounding?
Well, no, because Zoe was more athletic than Camby.
He was a pure rebounder, shot blocker.
Yeah, he sort of had fraud numbers because he wasn't really doing much out there except for helping on the weak side and grabbing rebounds.
I guess the reason Camby comes to mind is because George Karl's our coach, and I'm just assuming that, like, if he's going to play an up-tempo offense – he's going to hang somebody back, and it's probably going to be Willie Cauley Stein.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. But I'm trying to find Draft Express is who they think his comp is coming into the league. Where did it go? They don't have that up anymore. You know, they used to have best case, worst case on Draft Express, but they don't have it anymore. So, I think his offense is still pretty raw, but they don't need him to be really good on offense. But he's really athletic. I like that he can guard the three if he needs to. If he needs to, I wouldn't recommend it. He should stay four, on the fours and the fives. And he'll be really good on the weak side. I think if the defensive scheme, if they push the ball to the outsides, sort of baseline, he'll be good. He'll be good on the weak side. I think he'll be a good he'll get some good block numbers.
Awesome. Okay. So Willie Cauley Stein is going to be pretty good. And he's going to be our starting center.
If not starting, he'll get the most minutes. He'll get the most minutes out of the big men not named DeMarcus Cousins.
Cool. So if Costa Kufis moves to our bench or Willie Cauley Stein's on our bench, it doesn't really matter. Is this the best bench we've had since the bench mob?
Oh my God, not even close.
Really?
So, oh yeah. So the worst part about the team last year was arguably the bench. And by arguing, I mean definitely. It was the worst part of the team was the bench.
Okay, but we've added some guys.
Yeah, what I was going to say is they've improved at every single spot on the bench without sacrificing any of the starters. Right. So it's going to be the best Kings team in a long time.
Unless you call Darren Collison a sacrifice.
Well, no.
Sacrifice to the bench.
Oh, sacrifice to the bench. I don't know about that. Darren Collison has outplayed Rajon Rondo so far in the preseason.
Okay, that's my next question. So we'll talk about that after, but let's stick on the bench for now.
It's the best bench the Kings have had in a very long time, mostly because for so long the back end of the Kings roster was barely NBA talent.
Right.
So just having real actual NBA talent on the team is a huge step up. So it's easily the best bench since the bench mob.
Awesome. Okay. Because, I mean, I look at the signing of Marco Bellinelli. The success that Omri Caspi had last year coming off the bench and playing in Carl's system. I look at the signing of Costa Kufis and knowing that one of them is going to be playing backup starter center minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I look at Quincy Acey. I mean, they brought Quincy Acey back, who is arguably one of the hardest working players on the Kings have seen in a long time. So And then, of course, Darren Collison running the show. So, I mean, or Rajon Rondo, either or Seth Curry. Maybe Rajon Rondo falls out of it entirely. But I just look at this bench and I think this is a bench that should be able to outscore a majority of the benches in the league.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the Kings bench and they're arguably a bad starting unit, which is
right.
Pretty good. I mean, if we assume that if we assume Rondo is going to be starting, which he'll probably start the season as the starter just because he's got the big money. So you've got a bench of Collison, Bellinelli, or McLemore, which is something that's up in the air. Omri Caspi, Costa Kufos, and we'll say Willie Cauley-Stein. He's sort of in that middle starter slash bench role. I mean, that's a bad starting lineup. So that's a pretty good bench.
But
it's
a conceivable starting lineup. Like, you could conceive that being an NBA starting lineup.
Yeah, I wouldn't be happy with it, but no, I could see it happening.
Maybe the Sixers would. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. The Sixers are trying to figure out if they can start draft picks at this point.
Yeah. Okay. So I agree. I mean, I think that when you hear, you know, Grant Napier and you hear fans calling into the Grant Napier show, who, for people who don't know, that's Sacramento's like number one sports program, radio program. You hear so much enthusiasm. You hear so much about this team, but you've heard that every year for the last 10 years. So it's kind of hard not to take with a grain of salt. But when you look at this team, I mean, these are all high upside players that could go out and really make a lot of noise. So I have a lot of positivity about this team. And moving on to question number three, you mentioned Rondo and Darren Collison. Focusing on Rondo, will Rajon Rondo be any good, or is he just going to be a total jerk face and not be good at all?
It could be both. He could be a jerk face, but still be good. There's already news that there is a stir where somebody asked Rajon Rondo about how his relationship with George Karl was going, and he deadpan straight face.
Is the answer to that ever good?
He deadpan straight faced. He said, "Oh, it's terrible. We're not even talking." And
oh no.
And the media ran with it. And Boston media went, okay, guys, we need to tell you about Rajon Rondo. He's kind of that's funny to him. Like, that was a joke. So if that was a joke, that tells me that things are going okay with Rondo and Carl. Because, I mean, Rondo, he's an incredibly smart guy. I've heard him described – the term's borderline offensive, but a basketball autist, where he's just sort of like, he has no social skills because all of his brain power goes towards basketball and being really good at basketball. So right. But he knows enough that if things are going bad with Carl, he can't really joke about that. You know, he can't, oh yeah, we're doing terrible. And then, you know, 3 months from now, it's like, oh yeah, that joke wasn't actually a joke.
Well, even if it was a joke, the odds of George Karl perceiving it as a joke are slim to none, right?
Yeah, if there was any sort of issues whatsoever. But I think he'll be good. He didn't play as much as I thought he would in the preseason, at least in the games I saw. So I didn't get a chance to really see how his knee was doing because he had the ACL. He was a little slow last year. But those things take a while to resolve sometimes. So,
right.
I was just hoping to see what his speed was going to be like, but he was still doing the Rajon Rondo thing, which is a kind of cool when he's on your fantasy team, but really annoying when he's on your real life team, which is he's passing up open shots to try to rack up assist numbers. Like, that's really annoying. And he's still really bad at free throws. That's not going to change, but right. I think he'll be exactly Rajon Rondo on the Celtics right before they traded him. Just not Rajon Rondo on the Mavericks.
Wow, I mean, if he's Rondo on the Celtics.
Well, no, not prime Celtics, but right before they traded him. So
I mean, that's still a 10 assist player.
Well, yeah, and that's you know, if the Kings could actually hit their shots, then he could be a 10 assist player with the Kings. But it's a matter of them
actually hitting the shots. Yeah. Okay, agreed. And when you're talking about guys who haven't exactly thrived on shot efficiency, like Rudy Gay in the past, like Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins, maybe that's a little too much to ask. But
yeah, plus Rudy loves to make his own shot. There's that too.
That's also true, as does DeMarcus Cousins. So
yeah. So that he'll put them in the right position to succeed, but about his 10 assist numbers, I don't know if that's going to happen.
So you mentioned his speed. Does he look fast enough to be able to run this offense?
Yes. I mean, it was the matter with his knee issue was his short area quickness, his first step. And that I didn't get a lot to see because I was looking at other things when he was on the floor. I was trying to watch the offense as a whole. And I've been having trouble finding a reliable way to go back and watch the games because Ball Streams is down, which was my go-to.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he's looked good enough. He's looked serviceable.
Here's the thing I don't like about Rajon Rondo. I don't like that even with the de-emphasis on him as a main piece in the offense of the last couple of years with Boston and Dallas, even with that, he's still shooting like around 430. And with Boston in 2013-14, he shot 40%.
Yeah.
That's really bad for somebody who doesn't take a lot of shots.
Yeah, and he this preseason I pulled up the stats. He's shooting 50% from the floor, so it's a little bit better. It's probably better shot selection or pure dumb luck. His free throw shooting is 40% though, so that's not very good.
Right.
But you don't need him to shoot that much when you have Rudy Gay, DeMarcus Cousins. Arguably, he'll be playing with Marco Bellinelli a lot. So he can just create for these other guys and then score when he's needed to. So I think they brought him in to play a very specific role, and I don't think that role involves him shooting the ball very much.
Good, because the other role he's going to have to fill is as a perimeter defender. And if I know you mentioned that there was going to be a potential Bellinelli-McLemore competition for that starting shooting guard spot, but if they were to play McLemore and Rondo together on the floor, that might be a really strong perimeter defense.
Oh, it would be a very strong perimeter defense, I think. And I think that's both of their backcourt positions sort of mirror each other in that you've got Rondo and McLemore who are the better on the defense, and McLemore is the more athletic player out of all four of their, you know, rotational guards.
Right.
And then you've got step behind that, you got Collison and Bellinelli who are more offensive, shoot the ball, defense may become secondary to them. So if they need a defensive team out there, they have the players to do that. If they need an offensive team out there, they have the players to do that. And if the splits were somewhere around 24 minutes a night, I would not be surprised if they mixed and matched based off of who the team's playing, how the team's playing. If Cousins is just going off, then it's going to be Rondo and McLemore show. Right. If Cousins is struggling, well, let's get Collison and Bellinelli worked in, get some offense going. And Bellinelli did that in the first preseason game this year where he brought them storming back. I think he had something like 16 points in the fourth quarter or something crazy like that. Wow. He reminded me of Marcus Thornton on the Kings if Marcus Thornton was like a good shooter. Remember that like month when Marcus Thornton was like really good? That's what Marco Bellinelli reminded me of.
When he got his banner up in the up in the stadium and stayed there.
Yeah, that's when I tried to buy a Marcus Thornton jersey and the Kings website didn't work, so it saved me from myself. But he was shooting just without remorse, and I really like that. The Kings haven't had that really good perimeter threat just solid, could knock down three at any time, really, since Peja.
Peja, I think.
Consistently. Thornton flashed here and there, but I like him. And also, I came up with the best nickname ever, and I need to trust you to help me spread it for him.
Sure.
So, something called Peanut Butter Belly Time.
Are we going to have people dressing up as giant bananas?
And, I hope so.
And come into the Butter Belly Time.
Yeah. If we could become the milkman of Marco Bellinelli, you know, the bellyman, I guess they would be, and we dress in bananas, that would be pretty good. I think the Kings would be the type of franchise that would give us season tickets for that.
I think so. We got to get that going. You got to move out to Sacramento, drop everything, and we got to get this thing off the ground.
All right. I will break the bad news to you. Yeah. They're like, sorry, Kate. No. Kate, no. The plan is we're dressed as bananas. Because, no, remember that video with the banana, peanut butter, jelly? Well, his name is Bellinelli, so it's like where are you going?
Are you leaving me?
Yeah.
I mean, we could always just surprise her and pull it out at the wedding. I mean, even if she turns it down now.
I think I know, instead of suits, all the groomsmen can just wear banana outfits. And she can walk down the aisle to an orchestral peanut butter jelly time.
Wow. Yeah. Good luck explaining that. So anyway, I like it. Yeah, that sounds like the Kings are going to be pretty good. And thank good. And thank
you. It's a very much a shut up and take my money situation. So I had to try so hard to find the games.
Right.
I'm not entirely convinced my computer just isn't full of viruses from all the shady, like, Russian sites I ended up going to try to watch the Kings play.
Oh, no.
So it was definitely...
You probably made a few arms deals in there, too. That
yeah,
really.
Probably. You know, it happens. It happens. So, all right. Well, we are up against it, Joburg. It's been about an hour and a half. So do you have any closing thoughts here for our loyal listener or two?
I would like to go on the record and say that I think the Niners are going to win the game tomorrow night.
Oh, against the Seahawks. We're going to talk about that. Let's spend 5 minutes. I think it will be a well-fought game. I think it will be a close game, but I think that the Seahawks will pull it out. I think that Kaepernick steps forward. A lot of it had to do with the defenses they were playing. Mm-hmm. They had no secondaries, no pass rush, which is all that the Seahawks have. But also, I think a lot of it will come down to two injured players, Carlos Hyde and Bobby Wagner. If Hyde's good to go, it'll give the Niners a leg up. If Wagner's good to go, the Seahawks might have the upper hand. But I could definitely see the Niners pulling this one off just because of how dysfunctional the Seahawks have been. And the 49ers have, they haven't been
competent lately.
Yeah, they haven't been good for a lot of the season, but they've all been on the same page, excepting that one, excepting the Packers game.
Torrey Smith and the Arizona game.
Well, I mean, in terms of, like, turmoil, like when Torrey Smith and Anquan Boldin are, like, stomping off the field, like throwing their hands in the air, getting all frustrated.
Right.
I didn't see it live, but I rewatched the Greg Olsen touchdown. And he's just, like, running free as, I think it was Earl Thomas, maybe it was Cam Chancellor, and Richard Sherman are both just like pointing at him. Like, they're like, what are you doing? That was your assignment. So they're having some issues on the field. I hope that they win. I mean, that would definitely be nice. I'll be there. I'm taking tomorrow off of work to do it and then Friday to recover. But,
okay. So if you're going to be there, if you have any chance to pull Jim Tom Sula aside, this is what you tell him. All right. You tell him that you watch maybe how the first few minutes of the first couple drives for the Seahawks turn out. If they're using Jimmy Graham, you take Bowman and at least shift him over, or you take Will Hoyt out and you put in Gerald Hodges, because that's the whole reason they went out and got Gerald Hodges was for pass coverage, because they were getting killed in pass coverage to tight ends. So that's what you do. You play Gerald Hodges on Jimmy Graham. But, you know, if present trends continue, they might not even use Jimmy Graham regardless. So that'd be nice.
Yeah, he's been not that great this year. They sort of got on the same page last game. But They're having some trouble. He's in there blocking, and he stinks. He's garbage. He's a stinky blocker. He's like the worst.
He's like the worst blocker. Yeah.
He's so bad at blocking. Remember, they tried to reclassify him as a wide receiver. Like he doesn't make any pretense that he's a tight end.
I mean, can you imagine if the Chargers had ever asked Antonio Gates to block? It's essentially the same thing.
Oh yeah, or Tony Gonzalez.
Right. Yeah. But at least Tony Gonzalez was a competent blocker. I mean, Antonio Gates and Jimmy Graham are ex-basketball players. I mean, they played basketball in college. They want to go out there and leap and catch the ball. They don't care about blocking guys. They just don't care.
Nope, they do not. And so that's why I think it's really funny that they – if you look at all the plays that Jimmy Graham is in, he's lined up on the line so much and he ends up blocking so much and it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Because what happened was they have no good offensive lineman anymore except for Okung, who's not playing well.
Right.
And so they have to have him on the line for extra blocking because the offensive line is so bad. And they train an offensive lineman to get him. It doesn't make any sense.
And does it even really matter? Because Russell Wilson is not a pocket quarterback. He's a mobile quarterback. So who cares if the pocket holds up? Let him run out.
Yeah, what's one extra guy on the line that's not blocking? I mean, they already have five guys on the line who don't block. What's six guys on the line not blocking going to do for them?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think the Niners are going to win this game, partially if that scenario ends up playing out, and also partially because this is a team in the Seahawks that is so built on the running game, and they're going to bring Marshawn Lynch back. They're going to want to run the ball, and our run defense has been great. I mean, we shut down Adrian Peterson. We've shut down Eddie Lacy, but then again, everyone has. We've shut down big-name running backs, and I don't think it's going to be any different in this Thursday night game, especially on a short week.
Yeah, I think the short week thing will definitely come into play. The rush defense has been their number one thing. Their defensive line is built to stop the rush, and it's been working. And, you know, if they do what you said and they lock down Jimmy Graham, I really don't think, you know, Doug Baldwin or Jermaine Kearse are a big threat to really take down the Niners.
Well, you hope not, but our corners have been atrocious this year.
Yeah, but I think, the Seahawks wide receivers are atrocious. So it's sort of
that's true. I mean, they're very underwhelming. But that I'd say Doug Baldwin is always capable of breaking off a 100-yard game.
Well, that's because Doug Baldwin has been the main recipient of Russell Wilson's BS over the years. And it all goes as far as Russell Wilson's BS will take them.
And as far as the referees want to gift games to the Seahawks. So I could definitely see perhaps a deep pass to Doug Baldwin for a game-winning drive that is in fact not a reception in the end zone, but that will be up to the referees to decide.
Yes, that's actually, you know what I think will be the deciding factor is I think here, this is my prediction. If Eric Armstead, he's been, every game he's played a lot better. He's been getting a lot more pressure. He's been, becoming a lot better at getting at and after the quarterback. If he has that breakout game finally, that first-round pick game, he doesn't even necessarily need to get a lot of sacks. He just needs to get a lot of pressure.
Right.
And we really stick it to Russell Wilson, and the BS doesn't have time to develop. And Lynch finally gets to the quarterback. He has so many near sacks, it kills me. I think that it all comes down to that pass rush. Their pass rush has been worse this year. If it gets better, I think that's the key to it because the rush defense is solid, that we don't have to worry about that.
Right.
And it all comes down to getting at the quarterback, getting at Russell Wilson, not letting his BS beat you. And I think that might be a problem just because Bowman is looking a little hesitant on the second level, so they can't just plug him in to spy Wilson. They're going to have to put somebody less athletic to spy him. It might be Tart because Tart's essentially a tiny linebacker at this point. He's not doing a lot in coverage. So it might be Tart to spy Wilson, which will help. If they get Tart, Armstead, and Lynch to sort of contain Wilson with that terrible offensive line, I think that they can pull it out. I'm not super confident. I don't want to go on the record. I'm kind of like trying to figure out how they can do it because I don't have that much confidence in it.
Well, I think that the hardest thing for Tom Sula to do is going to be taking some responsibility away from Bowman and giving it over to Gerald Hopper. There's going to be a lot of short, quick passes and dump-offs over the field, whether it be to Marshawn Lynch or Jimmy Graham or whoever's sitting there. I mean, Doug Baldwin doesn't necessarily go deep. He likes to chill out in the, 10-yard range. So I think that's where this is really going to come into play, is how's our coverage in the middle of the field?
Mm-hmm. And that's where Bowman's still being rusty is a problem, because I've noticed in coverage he's I don't want to say hesitant or questioning what to do, but he's not as good at coverage this year, and he's slower.
Part of that is his knee.
Yeah, it's, and also you watch him out there, he sort of bounces, like he's not quite sure what to do,
right,
or where to go, or how to play it. Because I think he questions, if his knee will hold up. So I think it's partially mental. Because if you watch him when he's diagnosing the run, he's like, all he has to do is, pick which way he's going to go and go. And he's knocking guys down in the backfield. He's much better in run coverage. And I think, it all comes down to his knee. And he doesn't know if he can trust it at this point. So I think it's a lot of mental.
Right. And part of that could be because he's always played the run. I mean, he really has always been the run specialist linebacker. And when Willis was the guy next to him, Patrick Willis handled the pass. I mean, those were their natural roles. So maybe trying to ask Bowman to be this all around run stopper, pass stopper, maybe that's a little out of his, maybe it's always been out of his realm. I mean,
see what stinks is towards the end of the year that, the 2013 year, so the year he blew up his knee, he was starting to take that role from Willis because I think Willis's feet were starting to bother him and told him to run to his retirement. He was starting to be better at pass coverage, and then his knee exploded, and so it all went away again.
Right. Yeah, I think that you could see that budding confidence. He was turning into that, heir apparent to Patrick Willis, and then his knee blows out. He loses a year. And he never gets to define himself in that role. And then, of course, everything else goes to crap. So,
So, all right. Well, good. We got a good talking about the MLB playoffs, which the NLCS is over. So it's going to be the Mets. We'll see how the Royals and the Blue Jays shake out. And in the first Kings game is a week from tonight, actually. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's the 28th, so I'm glad we're able to talk about that. And I guess next time we talk, we'll see how the Seahawks game went.
Jeff, I'd also like to wish you a happy birthday.
A happy birthday?
Yes. Do you know that today, exactly today, is the very first, the year anniversary, the very first airing of the Homers of the Fat podcast?
No way!
It's today.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank everybody who got us here. BoltShare for believing in us, becoming the first sponsorship deal. But I think we'll pick this up a bit more in the future. I like doing this. So, yeah, happy birthday to Homers at the Bat, huh?
Happy birthday to Homers at the Bat.
All right, guys.
I'm going to celebrate it by watching the George Brett craps his pants video.
All right. I'm going to celebrate it by watching Jim Tom Sula farts his pants video.
Nice.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Adios.